I didn't remember that it was Scott and Lori's anniversary. But today is about romance. Romance is a word that strikes a different chord with different folks. And I want to be sensitive to that, because romance to some people is the most beautiful thought in the world. And to others, it's one of the most painful. So I want to be sensitive, but I do want to say this. We didn't create romance. The Lord did. And He is the great romantic. And if I said nothing else today that you would take in this. He's romantic towards you. Did you ever think about that? Now that's not original with me, but I've come to believe that that is something that we need to understand about who God is. That He's our great and wildest lover, our pursuer. And He has and will and has proven and will continue to prove that He doesn't hold back. He doesn't hold back. Kent and I meet once a week to solve the problems of the world, our lives, and if we get a chance, we study the Bible a little bit too. We didn't get that chance last week because I got him off on a wild goose chase. He told me that he and Karen were going to have their 33rd anniversary this weekend, which was Friday, so very good. And if you recall, Kent is the director at Salem for Youth, and I'm trying to encourage him and help him find some connections that will be an asset to Salem. And they are now raising cattle. And I knew of a connection to a ministry whose proceeds are from raising cattle, and then they assign them to different missions. So I got all fired up. I got him all fired up. This is Wednesday. And Karen, I don't know if you knew it, but there was a time on Wednesday morning where you were going to spend your anniversary in Bismarck, North Dakota. You were told, yeah. Guys, if you just need an idea of where to go on a romantic getaway, see me. Because what's better than Bismarck, North Dakota? But I see that they're, in fact, here. So I guess they didn't sink the Bismarck after all. So, yeah. This idea that God is a romantic God, I like to assign that to the very beginning of the Bible. To the very first things we learn about God. That in the beginning He created. And did He or did He not create beauty? And a creature made in His image that had the capacity to embrace beauty. Now, I love critters, especially if they're prepared properly. Oh, no, that was bad. No, I do. I'm an animal lover, really a pet lover. As much as I've loved my pets, I honestly don't think that they ever contemplated the maple trees in our yard and thought, what a glory. Yeah, you know, maybe. Maybe that's something that was lost in the fall. Who knows? But people are made to embrace beauty. And that making is God's doing. Because, as Scott talked about, as we sang about, there's this thing called glory. Glory, glory. Word we use, we're just a pinprick in understanding the enormity of what glory is. But John tells us that they saw His glory. They saw His glory. And I think in that seeing, in that experiencing, those lives were forever changed because they knew that behind all of this this living that we do, with its difficulties, with its disappointments, with things not going always the way we want them to, that behind all of this, there's this thing called glory that's just waiting for the moment to burst forth and declare itself as overwhelming all that is wrong, all that is broken. And then Paul says that all of these things that are hard for us, these what he calls momentary afflictions, well, I tell you, if you got something wrong, or your child has something wrong, or your business is going bad, or whatever, those momentary afflictions seem pretty weighty, don't they? But Paul calls those things an eternal weight, burden of glory. Because you see, the burden ultimately isn't going to prevail. The hurt ultimately is going to be done away with. And glory is going to overwhelm. And here's the thing, friends, forever and ever and ever, our understanding and appreciation of what glory is forever will never be satisfied to the point where, oh, that's enough. That's enough of God. No. Nope. And so we live in this anticipation of glory. We don't know all that was lost with Adam and Eve, but that's where we started this series. We started with Eve. And I hope in our discussion of Eve, we have some mercy on her. She's so often just kind of the whipping child of all that's wrong. But remember, the Lord gave her a name, which is to give life. So the Lord saw Eve as the one who gives life. And let's remember how Adam reacted when he saw Eve. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. There was romance all over the place. You know what I'm saying is true. Fellas. Yeah, don't be afraid of this. It's beautiful. Then the next person we talked about, two people, Sarah and Hagar. And we know that Abraham thought that Sarah was a fox. We know that because he wimped out. He wimped out and said, okay, as we approach this situation, you're going to be my sister, not my wife, because you are going to turn some heads. That was horrible. That's the anti-romance, isn't it? Hagar, somewhat the victim of her circumstance, becomes the mother of a nation. We're going to see that nation again today, the Ishmaelites. Sarah, barren. By God's finger on her life, on her body, opens her womb to fulfill the promise he made to Abraham that a great nation that will bless the whole world was going to come from this union. All right, move ahead to last week, Rebecca. Now, I wish that we had a class in the patriarchs that we could just exhaust the amazing weaving of God's stories through the book of Genesis. Because one of the amazing discoveries that you'll find is that the same themes which are people's lives are repeated over and over again. The same blessings, as in God opened Sarah's womb, God opened Rebecca's womb, and we're going to read today that God opened Rachel's womb. they were all barren. And that God desired to show himself sovereign over this entire thing. So he opened their wombs. We see parallels of difficulties between wives, difficulties between brothers, Isaac and Ishmael, last week, Jacob and Esau, this week, Jacob and Esau, and Rachel and Leah, sisters. We see that over and over. These themes include the Canaanites, who are the descendants of Ham, the son of Noah. And why are they bad? What makes them people to be not married to? They are idolaters. And in fact, and I don't understand this, they are cursed. Read the account of Noah. After the flood, one of the first things that Noah does is to plant a vineyard. And I think that's a blessed thing. He is doing what he's supposed to do. The vineyard produces grapes. The grapes produce wine. Noah has a little too much. Noah is naked. Noah is passed out. Noah's three sons are about, and Ham happens to find Noah in this lowly estate. And Ham thinks it's funny. Ham grabs his brothers and says, "Where do you see Paw?" It wasn't funny. What wasn't funny about it is that Ham did not respect his father's dignity. Even though this is not a moment of great dignity, honoring your father and mother and respecting their ultimate dignity is one of God's supreme values. So, interesting how Shem and Japheth refuse to go along. In fact, they cover their father's nakedness by backing up with a sheet and covering him so that they don't see him naked. When all this is discovered by Noah, he curses Canaan. Canaan is Ham's son. He said, these children of Canaan are going to be cursed. Isn't it interesting that he didn't curse Ham, but he cursed his legacy? What happened here today is really, in many ways, about legacy. Who's this young man going to be? Who are his people going to be? We're going to read today that Isaac says to Jacob, "May you become a company of people, a legacy." And the Canaanites have a legacy, and it's being people who worship idols and not the true God. Serious, serious business. Now, this seems like it's ancient, and it is, but don't let it seem like it's not part of the way things are now. I contend that idol worship is rampant in our society and sadly even within the church. And I did a series, Counterfeit Idols. There's so much for us in these stories to help us, to teach us, to protect us. And so today, we have this guy, Jacob. Hey, our church. What? Jacob's well. We're going to get to that. Jacob should be an ultimate encouragement to us because, well, you remember on the Sunday that Salem was here, we ended the service by me saying, hey, if you were a rascal, come on up. And I didn't have to ask twice, did I? We had guys pouring up here to identify with those boys, to encourage those boys, to pray for those boys. Friends, Jacob in the womb was a rascal. His name means the deceiver, or one who grabs the heel. He's grabbing his brother's heel in birth. Let me out of there first because I want the birthright. I want to be the firstborn. And then Jacob does these things with Rebekah's help. We talked about it last week. His mom is a rascalette. He's a rascal. And they conspire to elevate themselves. But Jacob is an encouragement to us because as life went on, he began to get it. He began to get that the way to happiness was the way of holiness. He didn't understand that as a young man, but he begins to understand it. And I think he's had enough encounters with God where God showed up in a strong way that he knows that he doesn't live his life to himself. Because God cannot be denied in his life. Friends, that's true of you, and it's true of me. You do not live apart from God's constant presence. You live right in it. So whatever befalls you, God is there. And God is part of it. And God is hoping that you, like Jacob, will grow in trust. So, today we pick up Jacob. He's made it through adolescence, but he's got a long ways to go. This story is one of the great romances in all of literature. Genesis 28, page 22 in some of the church Bibles. Now again, I said over and over again, we repeat things. You remember last week we had Abraham's servant putting his hand under Abraham's thigh as a sign of covenant. And Abraham says, hey, go find a wife for Isaac. Look at how this one starts. Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and directed him, you must not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Exactly what Abraham said about Isaac. And know this, friends. Remember, now after this, 400 years plus after this, Moses says to all the people, it's what I'm saying to you today, tell these stories. Tell these stories to your children. Your children need to know these stories. As I said in the program this week, I took a little informal poll of people I knew were believers and said, okay, we got Rachel, we got Leah. Who stands out to you between those two? One person said Leah, all the others said Rachel, and the person who said Leah said, it's because I feel sorry for her. Okay? Well, we'll get to that. That's interesting. But the point is, again, don't marry locally. Get out of Dodge. Go find somebody. We know where they're coming from, okay? Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father. He's saying, go marry your cousin. And as I said last week, that's not always a horrible thing. I'm not saying go marry your cousin. I'm saying let's talk first. Take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. So in other words, your uncle Laban has daughters. Marry one of them. operative word, one. God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply. Boy, there's that theme. Fruitful and multiply all over the place. Fruitful and multiply. That you may become a company of peoples, just as I said to the person who's now missing. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham. You see how important this is? God blessed Abram, actually at that time, and said, I'm going to give you this land, and I'm going to make of your offspring, in one case, it's as many as the sands. Another, as many as the, it's hyperbole. It's, there are going to be a lot of you. Okay? It's so interesting to me that over and over again, it's the possession of the land that really matters to these guys. Because, you know, you can say that Dave and Sue, there will be thousands who will look back and say, oh, we had this grandpa and grandma. And that's cool. But in our living, it's the day-to-day. It's living in the land. It's having a life of provision. And that's what the land meant, was provision and influence and security. So Isaac says, Jacob, may God bring you back with a wife so that this land will be yours. I understand it. Not a bad blessing. Now, of course, there's this dynamic, again, the problem amongst brothers or siblings that we have throughout Genesis, of Jacob has a brother who actually was born first, but who sold that right for a bowl of soup and who was tricked out of receiving his dad's ultimate blessing. That's Esau. Esau hears that Isaac took Jacob aside and said, Jacob, go find a wife amongst these people. What does Esau do? He marries a Canaanite. Out of spite. Out of spite. That's the next passage. Esau marries an Ishmaelite. The Ishmaelites are Canaanites. You see, things are not all real healthy in Isaac's tent. Their family reunions, well, they just didn't happen. And if you're interested in this story, this is amazing. The story of Jacob and Esau as it unfolds. We're not going to tell that today, but it's an amazing story. So Jacob goes off. We have to skip so much here, but I want to get to the essence of God's romance. So chapter 29. Jacob's on his journey. And he comes to a well with some shepherds. And in verse 4, he says to these guys, my brothers, where do you come from? They said, we are from Haran. He said to them, do you know Laban? Now, who's Laban? His uncle. The son of Nahor. They said, we know him. Sweet. They said it just like that. He said to them, is it well with him? And the answer he gets is like, oh my gosh, God is with me. God is with me. And on his journey, he was reminded that God was with him. He also has a story in the back of his mind of when Abraham's servant went looking for his mother, the woman who was to be his mother, Rebekah. It's so much like this. And remember, or learn if you didn't know, she is identified by the man, by the matchmaker, because she waters the camels at the well. Right? Remember that whole business? So, they said, it is well. And see, right over there, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. And I can just imagine that because he knew the story of his mother, that he's ready for something like this to happen. He said, behold, it's still high day, noonish. It's not time for the livestock to be gathered together. He's thinking, this is unusual. Wait a minute. God is bringing the daughter that I'm supposed to marry right now at this unusual time, and he's all about it. By the way, he comes by his romance naturally, because you remember Isaac thought Rebekah was a babe. She was. I know. Water the sheep and go pasture them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. So this well is covered up. Must be a health reason or some reason they keep it covered up. This is where it gets really amazing. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Reversal. When Rebekah was discovered, she did the watering. Now Rebekah's son does the watering. But it's all intertwined. How about this, guys? I don't recommend this. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. Now, here's one. Is he fired up? Is he ready for this date? Come on. First of all, you've walked hundreds of miles through the desert. You're hoping the whole time there better be something at the end of this journey. And then when he sees her, he thinks, oh my gosh, this was so worth it. And I'm not going to let this slip away. He kisses her. Now, kissing in the Middle East, we know, is much more of a cultural thing than it is here. But I don't see it happening over and over, men kissing women, unless it's with romantic notions. I think it's awesome that nothing's really changed. Back then, the way to show her how much you loved her was to lay one on her. Has it changed? I don't think so. But he wept aloud, too. So, I mean, she'd never seen this guy before. He walks up, lays one on her, and he starts crying. Now, I've told you that the first time I ever kissed Sue, she had a mouthful of peanuts, and I didn't know it. And so she must have thought, who is this guy with such bad timing? Or maybe she thought, I'm just going to keep these peanuts in my mouth just in case. I don't know. But I do wonder what was going on in Rachel's mind here, because he starts crying. But boy, she's connected. Let's see what happens next. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman. Rachel, I'm your cousin. Now here's the thing, friends. Know this, that in that culture, and it should be the way in our culture, they tell the family stories. This was oral tradition time, friends. They would have told the story, and Daniel, stop trying to kiss Jen right in the middle of church. I saw that. Unless you really need to. Then we're all going to watch. Okay. They told the family stories, and you know that Rachel had heard the story about when the man came from a long ways away with camels and took away her Aunt Rebekah, whom she never met. Friends, they didn't have any way of communicating. There was none. You could only communicate as fast as a horse or a camel could ride, or you could walk. There was no other way. But you told the stories. So she knows the story, and a connection is made, and see her reaction. And that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. And I like to think about that. When she was like, oh my gosh, off she goes and tells her dad. Now, doesn't this sound like a neat start of a sterling romance? Okay, we don't have time to exhaust this story. You need to read this story. Sue's been telling me all week, you don't tell enough of the story. Okay, we don't have time to tell the whole story. So she very rightly suggested, ask the people to read the story. So I'm doing that, okay? She says it just like that. All right? Did I do that well, dear? Okay. So, she tells Laban, Jacob is smitten. It's over for him because he's in love with Rachel. This is amazing. He comes to Laban and says, hey, I'm on a mission. The mission is to marry your daughter. I choose Rachel. To show you how sincere I am in this choosing, I will work for you for 7 years. Mark, did Brandon say that to you?
He did not.
He did not. Think he was smitten? 7 years. I know some of your stories of your courtships. I love them. I just love them. But I haven't heard this one. Laban agrees. Friends, Jacob the deceiver is deceived. Do not think you can ever escape. And this always just makes my heart go. We reap what we sow. It is a truth. We reap what we sow. Isn't it interesting that the guy who had deceived his brother is now deceived? Because it's the big wedding. They get inebriated. He goes into the tent of honeymoon. It's dark as can be. A woman comes in to join with him, and he wakes up in the morning, and it's not Rachel. You know this story? It's Leah. It's her sister. You see, there is a tradition, and these were peoples of tradition, that the younger daughter can't marry before the older daughter. Laban just forgot to leave that out. So he took charge of that. Well, you know, we're told that Leah's countenance was all in her eyes. And it's interesting, reading different translations of this in the Hebrew, and I tried to get the ultimate one, and I don't think there is an ultimate one because I think they disagree. Some of them say, well, it's this verse right here. Verse 17, Leah's eyes were weak, this says. Other ones say they were lovely. Other ones say they were sad. She had expressive eyes. And maybe she didn't see very well. But that's contrasted with Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. So we've got that sibling thing going, right? I left something out that I didn't mean to. Look at verse 20. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. Okay, ladies, get ready to go. Aw. They seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. That's something, isn't it? His anticipation of round two, he's kissed her. I think that's probably it for 7 years. But she will be mine. All right. He's deceived. The deceiver is deceived. Now, here's where this gets so fascinating theologically. Remember I asked the question of people this week, whose story do you think is more significant? God uses our very sin, our deception, our brokenness to bring about his purposes. Every woman's story that we've told so far has been just this, that God redeems the story. God redeems what has been wrong and intentionally wrong. He redeems it to bring about his greater purposes. Friends, that is true of your life. That all of the things that we do and have done, that we haven't intentionally said, my way, not yours, God wants to redeem it. Jacob is learning to give it over to God. How do we see that? Because he signs up for another 7 years. That's something, isn't it? He may have thrown a fit. We don't know. But he does say, all right then, 7 more. And finally, he marries Rachel. Now, this story just goes on and on with all kinds of drama and all kinds of this and that. But it's time for me to close. And bring up the slide. Some of you who haven't been here long don't know the story of Jacob's well. There's a typo on there, but that's the sign. Remember last week I started with these things were not done in a corner. These are not made up stories. Friends, you can go to the site of a gift that Jacob gave to Rachel. I want you to think about how romantic he is. Honey, I met you at a well. And they were traveling, and he bought a piece of land that had a well on it. And he said, this is for you. Man, the guy's thinking, right? And he did favor Rachel to Leah's disgrace. But God had something else in mind. Okay, put that slide down. Thanks. The song we heard during offertory, "You're the Lion of Judah." We have a Judah in our church family. Who's Judah? Judah is Leah's son. Leah's son. Why is Judah important? Well, the first time he shows us that he is God's man is when Joseph's brothers, more sibling rivalry, Joseph's brothers, of whom Judah is one, want to kill him. He's so favored by Jacob, they want to get rid of this guy. And he wears this coat of many colors, which just mocks them. Okay? Judah is the one that says, hey, wait a minute here. What good is there in killing him when we can sell him? He saves his life. If he doesn't save Joseph's life, all of these tribes die of starvation. So in God's economy, amazingly so, this rascal Judah saves all the people with his insistence that they don't kill him, but they sell him to Ishmaelites. Now Ishmael enters the story again. The rascal Ishmael, who is a wild donkey, according to the Lord, his people are part of saving Israel. Jacob, of course, renamed Israel. OK? Okay, I'm going fast. All right. Now, Judah becomes a dad, has boys, boys die, have a widow. Oh, that's one of our next stories. You don't want to miss that one. The Lion of Judah, Jesus. Next slide. Here's Jesus talking to a woman. This is from John 4. This is the Samaritan woman. This is when Jesus said, if you knew the gift of God and who it was who was asking, you would ask me and I would give you living water. Where did this take place? Jacob's well. Where are you today? Jacob's well. Let's sing.